Hey, everybody. This is Bob Goodwin, president of Career Club, and welcome to another episode of Career Club Live. Before we get started, if you're watching this on YouTube, please subscribe, like, comment. It really helps. And the same if you happen to be listening to us on your favorite podcast platform. If you would rate us and provide just a little bit of a review, it really helps people find us. So thank you for doing that. Also, if you happen to be in job search, we would encourage you to check out some free resources on career.club under for job seekers, and you'll find them there. And then lastly, and especially in light of today's topic, if you are an HR professional, please click on the For Employers section. We would love to partner with you. And then lastly, please make sure that you sign up for our newsletter. It comes out just once a week, and it's always chock full of really good insights derived from our work with our clients, as well as some of the podcasting that we do. So with that, I want to introduce our guest today. Today's episode is really special to me. Our guest is a good friend of mine and someone who I hold in very high regard. His background is pretty extensive, so I'm going to do a little bit of a reading here to make sure I don't forget anything. So today we have the honor of speaking with Harold D'Souza, a distinguished advocate in the fight against labor trafficking and a beacon of hope for survivors worldwide. Harold's journey is both harrowing and inspiring. Originally from Mangalore, India, he moved to the U.S. in 2003 in pursuit of the American dream. However, this dream quickly turned into a nightmare when he and his family fell victim to human trafficking and debt bondage, a couple of topics I knew nothing about before I met Harold. Transforming his personal ordeal into a force for global change, Harold co-founded Eyes Open International, a nonprofit organization dedicated to combating human trafficking through survivor-informed research. His tireless efforts have earned him international recognition, including the prestigious United Nations Human Rights Hero Award just this year in 2023. He's been a voice of change at various esteemed institutions, including Harvard University and the UN. His dedication to this cause is further highlighted by his appointment to the United States Advisory Council on Human Trafficking by President Barack Obama and continued through the Trump administration. An author, a public speaker, and a true warrior in the fight against modern-day slavery, Harold D'Souza's story of resilience, an unwavering determination, and I would add optimism, continues to inspire and make a significant impact worldwide. So with that, I welcome Harold and looking forward to delving into your journey and learning from you today, my friend. How are you?
Thank you very much, Bob. Happy Thanksgiving. I'm doing fabulous. And thank you for inviting me.
No, it's been such a joy getting to know you over the last year. Yeah, I count you as a friend now. But as I said in the introduction, you know, an inspiration, but also a heavy dose of education. So we're going to go ahead and dive into your story because I want to make good use of the time. Do you mind just telling us a little bit about your life in India and then when and why you decided to make the move to come to the United States?
Yeah, but before you say that, Bob, I don't believe that I'm an inspiration. I always tell that three things. I'm a common man, I'm a failure, and I'm a sinner, which I'll share during my presentation. But in India, growing up as a child, it's every man's dream to go to the United States of America. So even today, going to the US means like going to Swarg, or Swarg in India means heaven or paradise. And they say only God's chosen people get an opportunity to go to the US. So I grew up in a small village, you know, like where my father was a farmer. And for him, education was last in the least. For them, it was like doing agriculture, taking care of the cattle. And so my dad, like growing up, gave us education first on the least, you know. I had a good job back in India, but my trafficker was shopping to get somebody to the US, which I didn't know. So I was invited on an H-1B visa, which is a work visa, on a $75,000 salary per year, plus benefits, which is mucho money, we say, you know, a lot of money. And so I came with that expectation. So I came to the US 20 years back on four things. I came on a trust. I came on a faith. I came on a promise. And I came to live my American dream. Mm. Thank you, Bob.
And what is your what was your job back in India? And what job did you think you were coming to in the US?
So I started my career in India from grassroots. So I've done my master's in marketing management. I've done my post-graduation diploma in human resource development. I've done my labor law. But I had a very good job. I was working for a multinational company as an assistant general manager. I was managing a big portfolio. I was doing extremely well. I had a car from the company, a driver. So I was on that high platform back in India. But I was invited here as a business development manager. So it was a very good position considering my education, my experience. And I was so super excited for my two kids that I never investigated or researched what an H-1B visa meant. I never knew anything. I had everything in black and white from the immigration department of my salary. And that is how I got the visa. And that is how I landed in the year 2003, February.
What were you talked about, you know, it's the dream to come to America. Just, you know, in 30 seconds to a minute, what were your expectations? What was your vision of what America was going to be like?
It was like growing up as a child, Bob. I always saw the movies, like The Good, The Bad, The Ugly. We saw Chicago. We saw New York in magazines. So there was no television when we grew up. So this is all fantasy. So it was a very big hype. It was like really I felt like I was going to heaven because a lot of people was celebrating, my family and my friends, even unknown friends. Well, Harold, you're going to America. Wow. So you're God's chosen person. And so that created more hype, more excitement for me. But when I landed, I was totally lost. When I say lost means here the culture is different. The people is different. I didn't know the law enforcement agency. I didn't know how this country operated. So it was like, for me, it was like, I don't know, like how you remove a fish from the fish bowl. I was totally lost. I just didn't know like what to do, how to communicate. And you don't see people on the streets. And to be honest, Bob, even today, in many foreign countries, especially like India, people respect Americans a lot. Mm-hmm. Like as a godly figure, as God, like Bhagwan. Bhagwan means God. Because a person who is an American, like with a white skin, they think, oh, wow, like, you know. So I always had that, I would say that inferiority complex or self-esteem, you know. Mm-hmm. So that was the feeling which I had when I came here.
Wow. So you referenced your trafficker, and I know we're going to get into this a lot more, but just briefly, how did they find you? How did you find them? And, you know, that you are making the decision to come here.
I had no plans to come to the US, and this trafficker was shopping and he had come to India. He was in Bombay. So by coincidence with some family members, we connected at a restaurant and traffickers are very smart. They're very intelligent. They see much more than any person can see or even a law enforcement agency can visualize. So he could see my education. I think he could see that I was a perfect fit and I had no clue. And he said, wow, like, you know, and he might have made a decision and he was shopping for a lot of people. And I didn't know that for anybody to come to the US for a job, there are certain criteria. Like you have to be educated, you should know English, you should have some job experience. Mm-hmm. After I came here, I realized he did apply for a lot of people to come, but the visa got rejected or denied, which was a blessing for those victims. But in my case, it got approved.
Okay, so you're married. How old were your two kids at the time?
So, my two sons, my older son was 7 years old and my younger son was 4 years old. But just to take one step backwards, Bob and viewers,
yes.
But how a person like me or anyone who is educated can become a victim of human labor trafficking so easily. Just one example. Mine's is an arranged marriage. I got married on May 29th, 1994. And my father saw this girl. She was in Bombay, my wife, Dancy. And he recommended, you know, it was not a forced marriage, but there was no photograph. So when I went to see her, to her house, I didn't know whom I'm looking. Like, you know, it was total, there was no dating. You can't go out. So, but we just met in her house, had a cup of coffee, and it was agreed mutually by the parents and by me. But I got married on four things, viewers and Bob, you know. Number one, I got married on a trust, a faith, a promise, and a commitment. Mm-hmm. And that is how traffickers are very smart. And that is how I became a trap. Because I also went on a trust. I trusted him. And in mm-hmm. India, it's a culture. Bob, if my two sons, if they meet you or anybody, they will call you uncle. And if it's your wife, they'll call her auntie. Anybody. Even if he's on the streets, if he's somebody's elder, that is how we have been raised. But that does not mean that's a blood relation, but that's a respect.
Yes. So you were inclined to give trust. The guy knew how to gain your trust and get you over here. How quickly did it turn into something very different than what you thought it was going to be?
It was within 24 hours of my landing. Or it was basically...
Where did you land?
Yeah, see, again, it was in Cincinnati, Ohio. At CVG.
So this isn't New York. This isn't Chicago. This isn't Miami. This isn't Houston. This is in Middle America, little Cincinnati, Ohio.
Yes. And see how I became, how I was manipulated, tricked, and trapped. So the day I landed, my trafficker asked me, Harold, are you carrying any cash? And Bob and viewers, I was carrying $1,000 cash from India. And that was a big money for me. And he tells me, I said, yes, I got $1,000 cash. He tells me, Harold, this is America. This is US. You can't keep any cash on you. It is not safe. So like, I was like, oh, shoot. I didn't know. So I trusted him. And so I gave my cash, all the cash and all the documentation. That is the biggest number one red flag. The biggest mistake I did in my life the first day. Because I trusted him and I thought that it is in the safe custody. Like you keep in a bank locker. And rest is all history. He made us work. I had come here to work for a manufacturing company. It's everything in black and white. I don't want to name it. But then we were made to work in a restaurant the very first day, the day we landed. And labor trafficking in the United States of America, Bob, happens at four places where I got re-victimized. Restaurants, gas stations, convenience stores, motels. It's a $150 billion industry.
Say that number again, Harold. How big?
$150 billion industry. $150 billion industry. Wow. The risk factor is very thin. The profit margins are very thick. Even today, out of 10, 9 traffickers do not get prosecuted. And I'm very happy and very, I don't know how to respect you that you're doing this event or program, creating awareness. Because the fear has to be on the trafficker or the perpetrator, not on the victims. And these traffickers are so intelligent. You know, it's a total, very well-planned business. They'll provide accommodation within the premises or just 100 meters away. So when I was working at these restaurants, I was not even like 50 meters away from the restaurant. So they provided me one bedroom apartment. It was just walking distance. So labor is available 24 hours. The biggest profit in human labor trafficking in the US is labor. And we are not aware of that because we get paid monthly in our country. And he knows that they don't pay you any salary. So lodging, boarding is taken care. Many immigrants who come from Mexico, they come through the border walking. So they do not have a bank account. It's a common trend even today, friends and Bob, that traffickers or perpetrators in labor trafficking withhold the salary of minimum 8 months to 1 year. So this it's all pre-planned. And they'll tell the Mexican or the immigrant, when you go back to your country, I'll give back your salary. So once he's in your grip, you can't do anything. And that is what he had done with us. And I didn't know how to operate a thermostat. We used to sleep on the floor.
I was going to say, tell people how well-furnished your apartment was.
We were staying in one-bedroom apartment with no furniture. There was no chair. There was no microwave. We used to sleep on the floor. So there was the floor was of a carpet. But I still remember in 2 weeks, we started working from 14 hours to 16 hours a day, 7 days a week, 365 days. My wife, Dancy D'Souza, was not supposed to work as per the agreement I came, because she was on an H-4 dependent visa. So were my kids, which we didn't know what is a H-4 dependent visa. So legally, she was not supposed to work, but he made her work. And he fixed her salary $2,000 a month. And he says that you have two kids, you got to buy a house. So we were staying in this apartment, no furniture, nothing. So I still remember after 2 weeks, we lived as a joint family back in India with my parents. So the first night when I was with my wife, we were walking home at night, 2 o'clock. I was so excited to see my two kids, you know, that I opened the door with so much excitement that my younger son was waiting for us and he slept near the door, and I hit the door so hard on his head that he ended today it triggers me. And my older son was sleeping 6 feet away on the floor like a rat. So these are certain examples that breaks down the victim in labor trafficking, and you fall into that grip, Bob. Thank you.
So you're working 12 to 16 hours a day, every day, 365, and the boys are staying by themselves in the apartment, locked in, basically?
Yes, see, it is such a big... I'm so happy that you could observe this. And I didn't know that in the US, that you cannot leave the kids alone in the house.
Right.
There has to be some caretaker, and I think there's some age limit of 14 years or 12 years minimum. We didn't know that. But here... our trafficker compelled us. We had no choice. And my kids were my weakness.
Of course.
And yes. And then down the road, when, again, it's a long journey, like job and family came to pick up my kids. That was after 2 years or 3 years when I was trying to fight the case against my trafficker. Look at the synopsis, how the thing flipped. But when I was going through this, nobody came to help me.
How long were you in this situation, Harold?
It was 18 months. The same year, in the year 2003, Bob and viewers, you know, how I became a victim of debt bondage. In the month of August of 2003, my perpetrator tells me, Harold, you got to take a bank loan. I said, no, I don't need a bank loan. I just need my salary. He says, no, you got to buy a house. You got two kids and you got to build a credit. And me coming from India 20 years back, there was no thing like credit card or credit score. I didn't know anything. But anyway, he drives me to a bank and in the afternoon, and within like 5 minutes, I sign some documents and there's a 5-figure check in my name. All traffickers and perpetrators are multimillionaires. And he was staying in a multi-million dollar house. He had a very lavish car. He drives me to his house. He had pre-planned everything. He takes me to his bar room. He puts a scotch in a shot glass and tells me, Harold, cheers, let's celebrate. So by the time I gulp the scotch and goes down my stomach, He removes a chit from his pocket and he tells me, Harold, you owe me this money. He flipped. Mm-hmm. In 1 second, I lost four things. I lost my voice. I lost my courage. I lost my hope. And I lost my freedom. And before I could realize what happened to me, and I was thinking, how the hell I'm going to pay back this money? He taps me on the back and tells me, come on, let's go. You owe me much more. So that was debt bondage, which I didn't realize. And next day, Bob, he withdrew all the money from my bank account. But I'm a strong believer of faith, F-A-I-T-H. My trafficker always told me, it's in your fate, F-A-T-E, that you'll be a slave till you die. He used to tell me like that. It's in your fate. You got to work. But God had a different plan. I believe in faith. That same chit came in the hands of the FBI. I gave them when my case was with the FBI after a couple of years. I think in 2007. They matched the handwriting. See, how small things, you know, how miracles happen in your life, how God holds your hand and takes you out of the storm where my trafficker said that he'll kill me. My trafficker hired a guy to kill me. So there are a lot
now,
of...
Now, Harold, you said that the trafficker called you Harold, but that's not what he called you. What did he call you?
Yeah, so that's a very good question. Even today, in labor trafficking in the United States of America, every victim has only one nickname. My trafficker is to always snap his finger like this and tell me, hey, illegal, come here. So I was never ever called by my name Harold. I was always called illegal. He used to snap his finger. So what happens in the mind, body and soul of a victim? He or she thinks that they're a criminal. And that is what I thought. He always told me that Americans do not like brown-skinned guys. And I believed him. They don't like immigrants. So he brainwashed me. So I was very scared of Americans. Had I met you about more than 10 years back, I would not even talk to you. Because I was scared that you will get me deported. They use four words, even today, to immigrants of labor trafficking. Number one, I'll get you arrested. Number two, I'll get you handcuffed. And when they say handcuffed, they do by action. You want to get handcuffed? Number three, I'll get you jailed. And number four, I'll get you deported. And no human beings, Bob, would like to hear these four words. Because all are innocent. All are come here to do something good. And another thing I realized, which I didn't know, for any common man to survive in the United States of America, you need four things. You need a state ID. You need a work permit, you need a social security card, and you need freedom. And how I was telling the FBI agent, I was telling everybody, the law enforcement agencies, how did he take a bank loan in my name? I never applied for a bank loan. I said, show me one bank in the world where you'll get a bank loan without applying. And later on, at one day when I was doing a presentation, the bulb clicked because he had my SSN number. He had all my documentations and I had no clue. I didn't know what was an SSN, Bob.
So, again, the entire timeline, and I want to hear about how you guys got out of it, but the entire timeline from the day one to the time you started to get out of this, how much time was that?
It was a very long journey. So, I'll just give some, this is just the tip of the iceberg. So I'll just touch some subjects on that. One is example to tell the viewers is that we never saw snow in our life. When I grew up as a child in India, we didn't have running water and electricity. So if you do not have electricity in the house, you cannot have a refrigerator.
Right.
So I saw snow here for the first time and we get a note from the school teacher that both my sons cannot come to school if they do not wear snow jackets. Now, we didn't know what is a snow jacket. They had sweaters from India. So this is a red flag. And then next day, my chef even then got 2 snow jackets for my son. And then next day, we got a note from the school teacher that both my sons cannot come to school if they do not wear snow gloves. Now, they had gloves from India, which was again woolen. So these are some small red flags. But the biggest problem, how it happened, how we got out, after 1 year, my wife could not take it anymore because I used to always break down. And she could not see me like work, do all the housekeeping, clean the toilets. We are working 16 hours a day. So one, I still remember after like, it was April in 2004, my wife confronted the trafficker in the kitchen and told him, she had the courage. And she told him that, why don't you pay me my back wages? You had fixed $2,000 salary. Can you imagine, Bob and viewers, he looks into her eyes straight and tells, what are you talking? Who told you to work? You're illegal. You're not supposed to work. I can call the immigration department right now, get you arrested, handcuffed, jailed, and deported. Can you imagine? So my wife was quiet. So then she tells him, okay, that why don't you pay Harold the $1,000 he gave you? I was just putting the buffet thing outside on the buffet table. So I go to him. He calls me and he tells me, Harold, what cash? What money? What are you talking? You never gave me any cash. So, like, I was like, you know, my emotions, feelings, sentiments were totally destroyed. I don't know how to explain to my viewers that if you lose money in the stock market, in a wrong decision or anything, you don't feel that hurt. This is a question of trust. And how do I prove it? Or what do I say? I was heartbroken. But I always tell, in God's home, there is delay, no denial. My chef, he heard it. And he told me later on, oh my God, you are not being paid because then nobody knew anything much. Well, you got to run away from here because he was in a similar situation in some other state. And that is how we went to the Blue Ash police station. And then we were directed to the U.S. Department of Labor at the federal building. My wife's case went to the Wage and Hour Division at Columbus. It took a lot of time. He sold the restaurant, kicked us out. And then he wanted us to get out of the country. So my story went from bad to worst. I was running like a rat and he was trying to kill me. He told me point blank, Bob, what, you know, that I'll kill you. And I could see it. I know that I didn't know whether I'll die today in the evening or tomorrow morning. I just want to share one small example with my viewers, which happened in my life, Bob. I always tell, do not be scared what the child speaks. When the child is small, he blabbers something. But be scared what the child sees and what the child hears. So I was telling my wife in the afternoon, I had lost almost 50% of my weight, that I'm going to die. So my younger son, Rohan, was playing on the floor, Bob, facing the wall. And then I get a tap behind after like 10 seconds and I look. And he tells me, Dadu, if you die, who'll take care of my schooling? Who'll take care of me? I look into his eyes. It was like God talking to me. And that is when I realized that, you know, I got to fight. I got to live. I cannot run away from the situation. So this is all a long journey till my case went to the FBI in 2007. And that was one of the first case of an H-1B visa. But see, again, Bob and viewers, they thought it was a case of back wages. And that is why we are creating awareness on human labor trafficking. So being trauma-informed, being survivor-informed is very important. I always tell that trauma has no expiration date.
Say that again.
I always tell that trauma has no expiration date. Because you think I don't get triggered, I'm also a human being, you know. But I decided, you know, either I had to live or die. I decided I'll live. Either I had to live in hurt or happiness. I decided I live in happiness. I had another two choice, whether to live in pain or pleasure. I decided I live in pleasure. Whether I had to live in fear or freedom, I decided I live in freedom. But then it is like running a marathon. I've got to work on this every day, every minute, to keep my mind in a positive way. It does not happen. You got to work for it. That's why I like to join the prayer group every Tuesday. And then I go to church whenever I get time. I'm a strong believer of faith. I go for walks. I try to do, like, try to work with victims. And because, you know, when I see anybody smile, getting freedom, it gives me a lot of joy. Like Mother Teresa always said, do not waste time judging people. Just love them. So just because somebody looks very shabby or is a brown-skinned guy, you don't know what is going on in his mind, body and soul. His behaviors might be negative, but his intentions might be good. We have to look at his intentions. We have to look at his heart. We have to look at his feelings. Thank you.
Yeah. So to come out of your experience that you've had with that kind of an attitude is amazing. Very quickly, will you share with viewers and listeners, you know, how you got out and then how that transitioned into, you know, being identified by President Obama and just kind of what's transitioned out of, you know, this horrible situation and how it's led you to where you are today?
Yeah, so I used to go to church at the St. Xavier Parish, and then one of the parishioners told me to go and do a program at Cincinnati Works in downtown, and I did my program there. And I didn't know that I didn't have any work permit, nothing. And that is where I met one of the members of them. You know, I would like to take her name. Her name was Jody Dries Gunot. She's an attorney now. And she was a lawyer. She took one of the classes and said that if anybody has any problem, they'll help. So that was the first light. I went to her, and rest is history. Then she got me connected with the White House, not with the White House, sorry, with the FBI. So my case went to the FBI, but they all navigated me to FBI. Once my case was with FBI, they granted me CP, continued presence status. So many viewers, they don't know that even if you don't have a passport, nothing, no documentation, but if you're a victim of labor trafficking, he or she is entitled for continued presence status. After that, they're entitled for a U visa or a T visa, then a permanent residency card, and then eventually the US citizenship. That is the path I walked. Yes. And now I can do the talk.
So you got out of this whole situation in 2007, is that correct?
Yes, the process started with the FBI. They were very fast. They did all the investigation. I was very scared. I was told that I'll get jailed, I'll get deported, because my case was with FBI. So that I was not coming out openly with the FBI agent, because I always had the fear. And the FBI agent, special agent, knew that, I think. She did her investigation. And I just want to give an example. Like, she came to my house and where my wife was sexually abused, and she came to know through her investigation. So she came with another investigator and they came to my house, and it was a very emotional scene that day to cross-verify that this happened, because we never spoke about that. And I just want to tell that this FBI agent was so strict or so professional. Once she realized that we are victims of human labor trafficking, she flipped, Bob. She always came to me like Mother Teresa. Yeah, so and once she came to my house, and then she realized that I was scared. She could see my body language. She went out. What made her happen? I don't know. She came back. She knocked. And then she told me, Harold, I'm here to help you to get your permanent residency card, to get you freedom. I'm not here to deport you or jail you. Do whatever you want to support your family. Because I was working at a store under table with cash. And I was thinking that if she comes to know, she'll prison me. But she said, I'm only here to help you. I don't care what you do to support your family. That touched my heart. You know, so, and second time she got food for us, Indian food. And that is how slowly, gradually, we started building trust on the FBI agent. That she is genuinely trying to help me and not deport me or not to put me in prison. And she was a very honest lady. Because my trafficker said that I have greased the palm of the law enforcement agency. Mm. So it took us a little time, but then eventually I got out. Then in 2008, the Cincinnati Works got me a job at Cincinnati Children's Hospital. And then my life changed. I flipped the script of my life.
Tell us about that, please.
Yeah, so I always had a burning desire, you know, like, I don't know, but I used to not talk. For 10 years, Bob and friends, viewers, I was not talking for 10 years. It was only my wife. I used to go to church. I was told by the trafficker that they'll expunge or throw my kids if they come to know that we are illegal, no documentation. But once I started working for Cincinnati Children's Hospital, you know, I was working the materials management department at a very low level. I didn't have a very big salary. You know, I don't mind sharing my salary. It was $11.70, but that was a big money for me. And since I was working second shift, I used to get a dollar extra differential. But I used to work 16 hours a day, Bob, and friends. You know, so every time my biweekly was 120 hours because I wanted to empower my kids. That was my goal. You know, I wanted to set an example for my sons. You know, like, we went through so much trauma, so much shame, so much stigma that I was totally destroyed. My self-esteem was gone. I could not even like talk. I was so ashamed of myself. I always tell Bob and viewers that I failed on 4 P's. I failed as a parent. I failed as a protector. You know, I failed as a provider and I failed as a person. But I flipped those 4 P's into passion, purpose, power and prayers. That's why I always tell people, you know, you can turn obstacles into opportunities. We need to fight. You know, we have to be optimistic. Nobody can decide my destiny, like my trafficker or perpetrator. Who is he? Because when he tried to kill me, he had a guy. You know, I was hospitalized. You know, doctors gave up. But I always tell, the fear of death from that day went from my mind, body and soul, Bob. Everyone has to die. Whoever it is on this planet. So God does not give visa for more than 36,000 days. Only for few, that is 36,000 days is 100 years. 100 years I'm not going to live. So things changed. And then I still remember, like, once I started working and I got the job there. I still remember on September 18th, 2011, we bought this house. This is where I'm talking right now. You know, and it was on June 27th, 2011. That's Dancy's birthday, my wife's birthday. The closing was not going on for 8 months for whatever reasons, because we didn't have a bank loan, we didn't have the bank credit. But eventually it happened on June 27th, my wife's birthday, in the morning, 10 o'clock. And the same day we moved here on September 18th, 2011, I bought the first car for my son, the Toyota Prius. That is my father's birthday. You know, I always carry my dad's photograph. So it is my father's birthday. I lost him in the year 2000. So I remember all the dates. You know, like, I still remember January 5th, 2012. I got a cell phone first for my younger son, Rohan. So things started transforming. And then it's a blessing. My trafficker used to wear glasses, Bob and viewers. And used to always tell, used to remove his glasses. But he used to tell me when he used to wear his glass. Harold, he's not even there, illegal. You can't even move 1 inch away from eyesight. And you know what God did? On December 16th, 2015, President Barack Obama announced my name at the White House on the United States Advisory Council on Human Trafficking. President Barack Obama was the first president in the history of America who started an advisory council on human trafficking. He appointed 11 survivors, and I was the first Asian American who was appointed there. And I don't know how it happened. People told me at a press conference, Harold, how did you get appointed? And I had no clue. I never applied. Yeah, really. It was a question which I really blew my mind. And I never applied. And I started thinking, yeah, I don't know how I got appointed. But on January 5th, 2016, I was inside the White House. So I always believe it's a blessing. So whenever I go to the White House, I make a small prayer. And I should always tell that I'm representing all the survivors. It's not me. And I always carry my father's photograph. You know, because I'm a strong believer of faith. I think of all the victims and survivors because I represent them. I want to be the voice for the voiceless victim. Yes. And it was during that period, Bob and viewers, that I was inspired to start a non-profit organization. I had no A, B, C, how to start a non-profit organization. And that is how Eyes Open International took birth.
And what's the mission? What do you do exactly at Eyes Open International?
Yeah, the overall objective of Eyes Open International is to be the voice for the voiceless victim. And it is focused on prevention, education, protection, and empowerment of victims, survivors, vulnerable populations, and community members worldwide. And I'm mainly focused on labor trafficking. I just want to share with the viewers that through a flight, so I have worked with so many hundreds of Mexican people from Guatemala, different countries, Nepal, Bangladesh, India, you name it. And they have come through the border. They have taken them somewhere from 9 months to 1 year to reach the US. Out of 10, only one makes it. They run out of food. So when they run out of food, they eat grass and leaves. When they run out of water, they drink their own urine. And this I'm talking like 20 years back with whom I worked. So this is a small example I want to share with my viewers that Bob is at Niagara Falls. And he sees two kids drowning. He saves them. And by the time he saves them, he sees another two kids drowning. And then he sees me at Niagara Falls. And he calls me, Harold, come here, I need your help. So we go and save the other two kids. So we got four kids whom we saved. And by the time we see that another two kids being drowned. So we go and save the six kids and then I run away from there. So Bob gets mad at me and he tells me, Harold, where are you going? Come here, I need your help. Then I tell Bob, please take care of the six kids. I want to see who's drowning these kids. So we need to focus on the roots, not on the fruits. So if we focus on the roots has to be good. So that is the reason I've done a research here that in the United States of America, friends, that there is no full stop or a stop on labor trafficking. To create a stop, we have to go to the source countries like Mexico, Guatemala, India, Pakistan, Nepal, and tell people, please do not enter the United States of America illegally or through shortcuts or do the do's and don'ts. So always tell, if you enter America legally, it is heaven. If you enter America illegally, it is hell. So always I promote in my talks, you know, that if you or anyone you suspect is a victim of human labor trafficking, sexual abuse, or LGBTQ harassment, please call in the United States of America 1-888-373-7888. That's the national human trafficking number. You will never get prosecuted. You will be saved. And same way, if you're in Canada, you call 1-833-900-1010. So there are resources available.
And we'll put those numbers up. We'll put those numbers in the show notes, and we'll also put it up on the screen later on. So thank you for sharing that. You mentioned earlier, Harold, and this is even in the introduction, because I've got a lot of people who follow me who are HR professionals. And I think about, what did you tell me? You said restaurants,
yeah,
hotels,
restaurants, gas stations, convenience stores, motels.
Gas stations and convenience stores. Right. So how can people make sure that the people that they're hiring are actually not people that are coming to them through the human trafficking, the labor trafficking supply chain?
That's a very good question, Bob. Like in this particular profession, you're talking about this recruitment agencies or companies. This is the four areas where I got re-victimized, but I just want to share you where, again, many companies, I don't want to name it, which you'll get it, like multinational companies in the US, they outsource. For example, even for employment for their IT jobs. One example, I get a lot of calls. Number two, for housekeeping. You know, maybe banks. They outsource it to a legitimate organization. But this organization should be investigated whom they're employing. This organization employ undocumented people. And they don't even pay them 1/4 of the salary. And they do all this work of doing cleaning up, doing stuff. I want to give an example where I was utilized, where my wife and myself, we worked not for a financial institute, for somebody where you pick up stuff and you go and deliver it to some other location.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay, I don't know name it. But the person who was allotted was getting $20 plus. we were paid $7.25. You know, but these all things happen. So this is a very good point. So I always believe that it's good those organizations get the contract for millions of billions of dollars. But when they are outsourcing to other people, they have to ensure that they are being paid. Who are those employees? And that needs to be done.
One of the things that you taught me, Harold, and I want you to share with people is, you know, I think hopefully everybody who's listening to this will be appalled that this is even happening, and that if you have an inclination, like you see somebody, you gave the phone number, so I want to make sure that we don't forget that, and maybe even you repeat it again. But if you see somebody in a hotel, restaurant, convenience store, gas station that you suspect is a victim of human trafficking, if you approach them and say, hey, you look like you might be in trouble, can I help? What is their reaction likely going to be based on the brainwashing?
I think at the first appearance or first meeting or even second meeting, if you ask them that you're a victim of human trafficking, I want to help you, they'll say no. Their body, because number one is the question of trust. Number two, that victim himself is not aware that he or she is a victim of labor trafficking. So you have to understand that. I want to just give a small example. If you meet a Mexican on the road or somebody walking and you ask him, yeah, capas amigo, he's a good man. Then I said, where do you work? He said, I'm working at so-and-so restaurant. I said, oh, mucho trabajo, right? He said, no, he'll say, mucho trabajo poquito dinero. So then you ask him, what do you do? He said, I'm working as a dishwasher. I said, oh, good man. And how much salary you get? He said, I get $200. Oh, I said, wow. So you get it like weekly? He says, no, I get it like monthly. Then I said, oh, so you work only 5 days a week? He says, no, I work 7 days a week. So no weekly off. So what time you go to work? He says, I go in the morning, 9 o'clock, come back at 10, 11. So if you calculate that, how many hours he's putting in a week and into a month, then he's not even getting $5 per hour and no overtime. But he's not aware. So he's being exploited. And yep. This is how they do. And at times if they provide them accommodation, he says, the employer will say, you know, you owe me like $1,000 rent or for food. That is how these people, they work. Another example I want to give. One of my friends, American friends, he used to follow me. He has come to my events. He's working for a very reputed airlines company. And his boss, lady boss, got interested. We never met with his boss, but she was following and she noted his hotline number, which I told you. And she used to go to this gas station for the last 8 years, Bob. In the morning, have coffee, in the evening, on a weekend, on a Christmas day, and always she found that same guy at the gas station. For 8 years, it didn't click. And that bulb just clicked. Oh my God, I go in the morning, I go in the evening, go to buy chips on a Sunday, Saturday is always there. She dialed that number, hotline number. And that person got rescued. Such a small thing, but one person's life was saved.
And so this now comes to the name of your organization, which is Eyes Open, and being able to see the things like you were just describing. The guy's there first thing in the morning, late at night, Saturday, Sunday, Christmas. Hey, he's always here.
Right.
Right? That sounds like maybe somebody who's trapped and doesn't know how to get out. And if you call the phone number, are they always going to send somebody, or are they going to ask you a bunch of questions? What would happen if you call that phone number?
I think I advise all the viewers who are right now on the call, Lena, to make that. I call just to check, you know, this National Human Trafficking Hotline number, you know, and then I tell them you should always check it out also. And then, but if you call them, they take all the details and they work on it genuinely.
Yes.
The National Human Trafficking Hotline number, they take it very, very seriously. And they will direct, in case if you're in Ohio, in Toledo, they will redirect the call. They have the entire team. They know how to do that. And they will ensure that wherever you said, I saw somebody at the restaurant or at a convenience store, they will make the proper investigation. They'll take your call very, very seriously. And if you can, but at the same breath, you are safe, stable, and secured. You are not into any problem. The trafficker will not know who called. So that is also another thing. So you don't land into any problem, but the same breath, you're saving somebody's life.
I can't think of a higher calling. Harold, is there, I mean, I know there is. I'm just trying to be mindful of the time, because we could go on for more hours. The work that you're doing, like you say, you're saving lives and you're driving awareness and initiatives. I know you also serve the governor in the state of Ohio in the same capacity as an advisor. What else would you have us know as we start to bring this to an end? And I think particularly how people, again, can help, how people can get involved with Eyes Open International. How can people take this, you know, story that you've told us today and do something?
Yeah, I just want to, first of all, thank you very much, Bob, for inviting me on this particular platform. I just want to suggest to the viewers that, you know, be alert. Remember this, save the hotline number on your cell phone, number one. Number two, follow Eyes Open International. It's a nonprofit organization. We are coming out with a very big conference on January 18th in Cincinnati. I'll share the flyer with you. It's the first conference, I think, organized by a survivor of labor trafficking. And we heard from Department of Defense, Pentagon top delegate coming as a keynote speaker. We have from the Attorney General's office. We have Dr. Kalyani Gopal. We have Hriday Rawal from India, who's visiting us to do a presentation there.
Wow.
By attending this conference, you can understand that what an individual can do. I just want to share, Bob, you are taking this personal interest. It's not that every time you have to give money, donation for a nonprofit. I'll give a classic example. My victims of human trafficking, whether it is sex or labor, they get four things complimentary: diabetes, blood pressure, dental and vision problem. My dental was all gone. I didn't know. And when I went to a normal dentist, they said that it's out of my control. You have to go to a periodontist. So anyway, to cut the long story short, I went to this periodontist. His doctor's name is Dr. Scott Silverstein. It was, I think, almost more than 10K, the amount. And I was thinking, I had no medical. I was thinking, what I'm going to do? But can you imagine, viewers, how a human being, such a high-profile doctor, Dr. Scott Silverstein, I always say, he did everything free, very passionately, even till today. So today I can smile thanks to him. So what I'm going to share is that if you're a professional, if you're a doctor, you're an attorney, you are a nurse, or if you are a counselor, you can devote your professional time, maybe 4 hours a month, to somebody, a victim of labor trafficking or sex trafficking, or to the community. Because many times people struggle. I was doing a presentation many years back, and from the crowd, one gentleman came and gave me his business card. And they say, I'm an attorney for immigrants. So if you have any case of any immigrant, I'll do it free. I was so touched. And then I realized that, you know, if there is time, talent, and treasure of wisdom, how you can give back to the community. So that's my only message to all the community members. Whichever way you can contribute, please do contribute in your own community, wherever you are. And always share love.
If they were to reach out to Eyes Open International, would you be able to direct them to some local resources wherever they might be?
Yeah, so I have my website. We have my email ID. I even share my cell phone number, to be honest, because a lot of victims, they call me from different countries. Yeah. So they call me, so I reach out. I try to help them. I have 12 board of directors on my Eyes Open International. We have the FBI agent who did my case. So she's on my board of directors. So because I always believe, Bob and viewers, that Eyes Open International is not my organization. It is registered under 501c3. Today, Harold D'Souza is there. Tomorrow, Harold D'Souza is dead. But this Eyes Open International is your organization. It is our organization. And this will continue lifelong to save victims. I always tell four things to take from my journey. Be happy. Think positive. Never quit. And believe in yourself. Because my trafficker always told me once, so many times, Harold, means illegal, used to tell me, illegal, impossible, you will go to prison, you will get deported. I never told him, but I'm telling today in front of everyone, for him it was impossible that I'll go to prison, but I should always tell, to God and to myself, Harold, I am possible.
Amen. I am possible. Exactly. Exactly. So, Harold, like I said, you're an inspiration to me, and I know you described yourself as a failure, which I don't agree with, but we can be friends and disagree on that point. But the thing that, you know, I just draw so much from you, it's like Viktor Frankl in Man's Search for Meaning. You have chosen to be happy. You have chosen to be positive. You have chosen to find your purpose, and you're living your life through that. And you know, everybody who's listening or watching to this is going through some challenge, and it's, you know, I don't want to, you know, rate one challenge higher or lower than another. Whatever your challenge is, it's big to you. But to listen to your story and everything that you and your family have been through, and that you emerge from this stronger, positive, and we left it, one of your high honors and bits of note is you became a citizen of the United States this year, yes?
Very true.
Congratulations.
Yeah, thank you very much. I'm very proud U.S. citizen, and that means a lot to me.
Well, we're very proud to have you as a U.S. citizen, so thank you for not losing faith and trust in this country because of a bad actor who doesn't represent what this country is really, really about. But Harold, I value your friendship very much. I appreciate your courage and your willingness to share your story with everyone. And if you are a listener, a viewer of this, I just can't encourage you enough to check out Eyes Open International. And as Harold said, whether it's your time, your talent, your treasure, your wisdom, which is a great ad. I didn't know that one before. But to be able to give what you do have to help people who are helpless and need any kind of assistance that you can provide to them. But with that, I'm going to go ahead and wind this down. Thank you again, Harold. I just have so much love and admiration for you. And thank you again for sharing your story today.
Thank you, Bob Goodwin. I know.